First, when it comes to living in the Great Lakes region, there's plenty to like. Beautiful natural resources, great quality of life, and access to plenty of services. But, as always, there's certainly room for improvement, especially when it comes to setting up the next generation of Great Lakes residents for success. Our next guest says that the region has the ingredients it needs to sustain and increase broad-based future prosperity, which is good news, but in order to reach that potential, regional stakeholders need to intentionally foster the productivity and well-being of young people. In a new report, she lays out some strategies policymakers and others could pursue to make the region a better, more prosperous place for young people and those around them. Heather Hahn is a senior fellow in the Center for Labor, Human Services, and Population at the Urban Institute. She's one of the authors of a new report from the Institute, Building Ladders of Opportunity for Young People in the Great Lakes States. Heather, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So can you give us some background on how this report came about? What drew you and your fellow authors to this research?
Sure. Well, the Urban Institute has a mission of elevating the debate and bringing evidence to bear on critical issues. So with support from the Joyce Foundation that's based in the Great Lakes region, we undertook a project last year that looked at the long-term trends for the region to understand its recent challenges and opportunities for the future. And one of the keys that we found there was that to revitalize the region, we really need to make sure that the 600,000 children born in the Great Lakes region every year and the children already living there are able to reach to their full potential. So a team of researchers from across the Urban Institute, experts in everything from early childhood to criminal justice, identified evidence-based actions that stakeholders in the region could take to build prosperity.
And we'll dig into some of those specifics, but I kind of want to zero in on something you said, Heather. You said revitalize, and you also talk about rewriting the Rust Belt narrative and resurgence. That to me sounds like there's a foundation there for success already. We just have to kind of refresh it and bring it to the fore.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, there's a lot of attention on the past in the Great Lakes region and the manufacturing jobs that have been lost. And I think sometimes there may be a tendency to look to the past to try to go in that direction. And really what this report and the series of briefs is focused on is looking to the future and thinking about those children as a key part of the future to the region's growth.
So what do you see as some of the biggest existing strengths of the Great Lakes region?
The Great Lakes themselves are a draw. And there, even though manufacturing has declined, there still is an important industry base in the region. And I think there is, I'm not from the Great Lakes region myself, unfortunately, but I know from people who I know who live there and have come from there that there's a real sense of pride in the region, and people who live there want to be able to stay. People who have left want to be able to return. And so I think that these strategies that we have laid out are ways to make that possible.
And as you said, there are several strategies, five broad strategies that are laid out in the report, and with the aim of building ladders of opportunity, as you call them, and economic mobility for young people in this region. And we'll go through each one of those individually in just a moment. But as you were putting them together, Heather, did you see any themes begin to emerge?
Well, I think it's really that each of these strategies is important on its own. And so when we were building, to build this ladder of opportunity, if you will, requires rungs of investment and attention targeted at each stage of child development, so early childhood, school years, the transition to adulthood, as well as investments and attention to some of the persistent needs throughout childhood for health, nutrition, parental support, economic well-being, physical safety, and justice. So each of these is a critical time and a critical issue for children, but I think it's really looking at them across a child's lifespan where the benefits compound.
Well, and let's start at the beginning of that lifespan. One of the broad strategies that you propose is supporting access to high-quality child development and preschool programs. And what do you see that looking like if it's done well?
Yeah, well, the early years of life are so important because the experiences during those first years can really influence a child's ability to learn, their ability to develop social skills, to self-regulate, to respond to stress with resilience. So really those underlying internal characteristics that set them up for success for the future. And crucial brain development continues in the ages of 3 to 5, those preschool years, when children are learning those essential cognitive, physical, behavioral, and emotional skills that prepare them to succeed. So it's really important that children get off to a good start. There are two key strategies that have evidence base behind them for improving the early childhood years. One is home visiting programs, and this is where trained nurses visit homes of infants, help their parents with getting their children off to a good start. These programs have a return on investment of $3 to $5 for every dollar invested in the program because they really help children develop their language skills, their impulse control, by improving the parenting practices. The other thing that I mentioned was the high-quality preschool, and that, again, helps with their cognitive and language development.
And then continuing on from that very early education, you also talk about eliminating reading and graduation gaps in K through 12 education. It seems like that's kind of a natural outgrowth from that first strategy.
Right. So the first strategy sets children up to succeed, but there's a key milestone at third grade, and that is reading at grade level by third grade. That's really a strong predictor of future success. And the children until third grade tend to be learning to read. They're understanding the phonics and the letters and the mechanics of reading. But after third grade, they really need to know how to read and to comprehend what they're reading so that they can grasp the subjects that they're reading. So to do well in math and science and social studies, they need to be good readers. So children who are not reading proficiently by third grade are 4 times more likely not to graduate from high school. So that's a real key milestone for the success of children.
Here in Wisconsin, we have a very significant racial achievement gap in our schooling and education. And one of the points that I saw that your report made was the importance of teachers being trained to be able to be an effective teacher for a range of children coming from many different backgrounds, and also the need to recruit and train more teachers of color. Why is that so important?
Yeah, that is really important. I'm glad you mentioned that. So Wisconsin has one of the widest gaps between white and black students in fourth grade reading scores. Our concrete recommendations there, as you mentioned, are first to prepare teachers for racially and economically diverse classrooms. And the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction actually is working on that. They're working with the Cooperative Educational Service Agency to support teachers in developing culturally responsive practices. But also, as you mentioned, it's important to increase the share of teachers who are of color. So research shows that when black and Hispanic students have a teacher of the same race, they perform better in reading and math. Even having just one teacher of the same race as the child in the elementary years can make a difference in their academic achievement.
We're talking with Heather Hahn of the Urban Institute. She's one of the authors of a new report called Building Ladders of Opportunity for Young People in the Great Lakes States, a brief overview. And Heather, so we've talked about early education, we've talked about K through 12 education, and then again, a natural step, you encourage promotion of successful transitions to adulthood, which could be higher education or the workforce or both. Let's look at what can be done to better promote college for a wide, broad range of young people.
Sure. Yeah, college is a key strategy for an individual for improving their lifetime earnings. Individuals with a bachelor's degree had about $1,300 per week in median earnings compared to less than $700 for those with a high school diploma. So one of the things that high schools can do is to have some dual enrollment programs or early college high schools where students have a foot in high school and college at the same time. They're actually starting to earn college credits while they are in high school to help bridge that gap. And then also having quality career and college counseling is important to help children, help youth recognize what their opportunities are and how to reach them.
I think I remember, too, in the report that you talked about the importance of kind of thinking about work preparation or adult life preparation a little more creatively and not as rigidly. So it's not you're either going to a four-year college or you're going straight into the workforce and probably earning less, that things like well-structured and regulated internships or apprenticeships, there's also a place for that.
Yes, absolutely. So I mentioned being in high school and having a foot in college. You can also be in high school and have a foot in the workforce. So it's really important to expand and improve opportunities for work-based and out-of-school learning. And as you mentioned, those could be registered apprenticeships. It could be enhanced summer youth employment or other creative alternatives so that youth have experience in the workplace while they're still in high school. Wisconsin actually had the most new apprenticeship programs among the Great Lakes states in 2016. There were 80 new programs, new apprenticeship programs that year. So kudos to Wisconsin on that.
We're talking with Heather Hahn of the Urban Institute, looking at what works for young people in the Great Lakes region, what doesn't work as well, and what still needs to be done. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think is the best way to support young people in states like Wisconsin? Where would you like to see investments made? And what can be done to set students up for future success in college, the workplace, and in life in general? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue this conversation after a short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Heather Hahn of the Urban Institute. She's one of the authors of a new report called Building Ladders of Opportunity for Young People in the Great Lakes States, a brief overview. And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How can we best support youth, especially underprivileged kids in our region? And what about their parents? How can we create more economic opportunities for those young people going forward? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Heather, so we've been making our way kind of through the life cycle of these young people, and another strategy in the report really covers kind of different parts of life: reduce criminal and juvenile justice involvement and related inequities. Does that just mean cracking down on crime?
No. You know, it's really interesting. Criminal offending peaks during the teen years and naturally declines as young people mature into their 20s. Hmm. So the key strategy, the underpinning for all the specific strategies that we recommend, is to recognize that fact, that that as youth develop, they will naturally become more law-abiding. Mm. So the point is to, we still need to take crime seriously and hold youth accountable, but do it in a way that is developmentally appropriate and helps them make that maturation process and not to interfere with that and trap them into a cycle of criminal activity.
So it sounds like what you might be recommending is pretty targeted intervention early in their lives to prevent them from entering that system in the first place.
Yes. So stakeholders can reduce penalties for low-level offenses and develop options to divert youth away from the criminal justice system and toward behavioral health services. So help youth get substance abuse and mental health treatment and other behavioral health services that they need before they become involved in the justice system. And similarly, with school issues, schools can revise the disciplinary criteria so that they don't expel students, which is a risk factor for justice involvement, but deal with the problems head on and avoid having youth enter the criminal justice system.
Let's go to the phones, and Chris in Milwaukee is up first. Hi, Chris.
Hello. I was listening in the car when you said that the early years were important, and it just kind of made me sick because we keep reinventing the wheel. About 30 years ago, Florence Heather Starms and I and others were on a program. It was a Head Start program that was federally funded, where the teachers went into the homes and worked with the young children and their parents. How can you count? You can count the knives and forks. How playing and showing how they can learn and teach their children to be ready for school. And then they were given a little radio and they 15-minute listening program. Every day they listened to a story on the radio. And then on Fridays, they came in, the parents and the teachers, and I had produced a series of films using children, demonstrating art projects, using boxes.
Thanks for that call, Chris. And we're running a little short on time, but Heather, that sounds like a pretty effective partnership between the schools and parents and going into the homes.
Yeah, and so I think some of these aren't new. I think they are, tried and true strategies. And I think that's a point of every strategy that is in these briefs, every strategy that I'm talking about today has an evidence base. And some of the way that we know that these programs work is because of evaluations of programs like Chris was talking about, where all of these strategies have been done and have proven to be effective.
The last strategy on your list is supporting the basic needs of low-income children and their parents. And actually, Becky in Milwaukee is on the line and I think has something to add there. Hi, Becky.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I work in the Milwaukee area as a parent coach with a nonprofit agency, and we work primarily with parents of kids and families who are lower on the socioeconomic status. And one of our main focuses is to help parents and kids understand trauma and how the brain works. And by understanding how trauma and stresses from economics can make kids less regulated and make families less regulated. So we go in and we help parents understand what self-regulation looks like and what that looks like in their kids so that they're able to see their kids in a different light. Because often we work with parents and they think kids are just misbehaving when they're stressed, but we help teach them that it's really that they're overstressed. And by doing that, we strengthen that parent-child relationship, which strengthens the whole dynamic of the community. So it's a really neat thing we're able to do each day.
Thanks for that call, Becky. Heather, that sounds like a pretty innovative program.
Yeah, and she talked about the brain science around trauma. There's so much interesting new information coming out from brain research on child development and even adult development and the effects of toxic stress on children and on adults. And so I think that, she mentioned the working with parents and helping them understand when their children are acting out that it may be the stress that they're experiencing. And I think that follows through even to what we were just talking about with criminal justice in the brain science there about teen brain development and how we can harness the evidence and the science that we know about how our brains develop to help shape our public policies.
Heather, one of the things that stood out for me in this category about supporting the basic needs of low-income children and parents is a lot of the recommendations were actually, the programs are in place. It's just making sure people know how to access them and making it easier to access. And that to me seems like a lower hurdle than trying to create something from scratch.
Yes, you're absolutely right. So for children to seize the opportunities that face them, they have to first be able to meet their basic needs for food and shelter and health and engagement with caring adults. And we have programs. We have federal and federal-state partnership programs that do that. And you're right, it's the accessing those programs that's the challenge. So Medicaid, for example, has proven not only to improve children's health coverage, but also yield long-term investments in their life improvements and higher wages. Access to nutrition assistance not only makes them healthier, but helps them be more emotionally stable and do better in school. Earned income tax credits also encourage work and reduce poverty and have positive outcomes for children. And likewise for child care assistance and for paid family leave. So the concrete recommendation there, like you said, those programs already exist, but it's to help make sure that families are aware of the available work supports and how to access them so they can make informed decisions about whether to seek assistance. So there are a number of strategies that states and other stakeholders can take to help make sure that people know about the resources and simplify the process of applying for them.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing the results of the report.
Well, thank you so much for this opportunity to share this research with your listeners. It's been a pleasure.
Heather Hahn is a senior fellow in the Center for Labor, Human Services, and Population at the Urban Institute. She's one of the authors of a new report from the Institute, which is titled Building Ladders of Opportunity for Young People in the Great Lakes States, A Brief Overview. It looks at how to improve economic opportunities for young people in our region.